Welcome to Off the Cuff with Aubrey Huff. With his co-host, The Hammer. The only show that's bringing you real locker room talk from the guys that play between the lines.
Well, we got a great show today, ladies and gentlemen. A very, very special guest. This man's been an unbelievable influence in my life and my career in baseball. And I'm excited to have him on the show, me and the Hammer. He played catcher in the big leagues from 1978 to 1987 with the Astros, Mets, and Padres. He managed the San Diego Padres from 95 to 2006, and also the San Francisco Giants from 2007 until 2019. He's a three-time World Series champion with the Giants in 2010, 12, and 14, manager of the year in 2006 with the Padres, and this season is his farewell tour as he has announced his retirement in spring training. Ladies and gentlemen, future Hall of Famer, my boy, Boach, thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Hey, of course, Aubrey. It's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has. I think the last time I saw you, I was actually at the Padres game probably a few weeks back. And
right.
I saw Longoria, saw Wotus, and I think you had some family sitting around me, but we didn't get the chance to see you. I kind of showed up a little late. I was drinking that day too. So it was a rough, it's different when you're a player. Let's just say.
Yeah, I know. I know it's good to see those guys. Well, you got another year, Aubrey, and I'm sure that the Giants are going to have a 10-year reunion for that big year in 2010 that you played such a huge role in. So you have to be looking forward to catching up with all the guys in.
Yeah, that's going to be good. That's going to be, and I got the Hammer here. He always wears me out all the time because I'm single now, Boach. I think you know that. And I always wear the 2010 ring out all the time. And, I call it bait because I can go out with it and it's like an 80% kill zone. Every time I go out and the girls see that ring, it's almost in the bag usually.
80% kill zone. He had that on last night and it wasn't working for him.
Well, it was a Thursday night at a bad karaoke bar.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah. Well, we've all been there.
Well, I'll give you credit. You're a smart guy. You've always known that, you're not easy on the eyes. And trust me, I've seen in the thong that going back to 2010. So you've always needed bait and you used Pat Burrow for years and now you get the ring. So, you're a smart man.
Right. Speaking of Burrow, have you heard from him lately? I think you said you saw him a couple weeks back.
Yeah, I saw him yesterday, in fact.
Okay.
But I've seen him the last few days. He's doing some pre and post game with Tim Flannery up there in San Francisco. And, when he stepped back, he was scouting for us and really did a heck of a job. In 2012, when we played Detroit, I mean, his report was right on. He just played a major role in our scouting and our knowledge on Detroit because he had such a good feel on baseball. But I think the travel, going to Korea, Japan, and traveling every day to different cities, I think it wore him out a little bit. So he wanted to step back, which he did, and now he's back doing a little TV. And he seems to be enjoying it, but I see him more now because he lives there in San Francisco doing some work for the Giants.
Yeah, I think a cool question to ask is, I remember in 2010, he was obviously, Pat Burrell was a big acquisition we made in 2010, and I remember how it happened. I think you do, too. When I was there, it was probably, I think, around June, and he had just gotten released by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And he called me. I was driving on the way to the field on a day game, and he called me, and I'm like, okay, what does old Pat want today? He was already about half a bottle of vodka down. He said, hey, buddy, they canned me. I'm like, what? The Rays canned me. I'm released. I'm like, oh, wow. Instantly, at the time, Boach, I think if you remember, we were having trouble scoring runs. We needed we were swinging at everything. We wouldn't take walks. And I was like, okay, Pat, I'm going to go into Bruce's office and we're going to get you here. I remember walking right in there, having a conversation with you about it. And you said you'd look into it. I think you talked to Sabes, Brian Sabian. And then within 2 weeks, he was playing minor league ball for us and he was up and really made a difference in that lineup. So if you could kind of tell us what he was like, not only in the clubhouse, but the presence on the field.
Right. And to your point, we are just missing a little thump, a little presence in the lineup. You were having a big year and, Posey, but still we're just missing another bat, another threat. And so We had nothing to lose. You know, when the guy's released, we get him for minimum. You know, he had roots in San Francisco, and so it worked out well. He went down and got some at-bats in AAA, and we brought him up, and he helped change our lineup. And I've said this many times. It can be one guy that, you know, we've had a Burrow, a Scudero, whoever it is, that made us a better club. And he certainly was that guy in 2010 because, first of all, he got the head out. And what I mean by that is point of contact when he swung the bat was out front and he pulled the ball. And so I think that got a little contagious with a couple guys. But, you know, the home runs that he hit, the offense that he provided, the big home runs too. You know, you get a big bat like a Burrow in the lineup and a change of scenery. He came in with a really good attitude, and he's always hit. I mean, the guy was the number one pick. You played with him down in Miami. Mm-hmm. And this guy was always – he was just a stud with the bat. And so it changed our team, and man, we don't win the World Series without him. Because if you remember, I mean, it was hard to get there, first of all. Yep. I mean, we were seven and a half games back in San Diego in August, and he gets some big hits during the early part of the postseason. I kid him. I said, you disappeared on me in the World Series, but I said, you helped us get there.
Yeah, that's the only dirt I got on him. I think in his playoff career, he's only got one hit. So, but, speaking of that team in 2010, obviously you went on and we won in 2012. I was gone for 2014. And out of those three World Series teams, which one, Boach, and be honest, was your favorite?
Well, and I say this, and I'm not saying it because I'm talking to you, 2010. I mean, that was my first one. It was the first one in San Francisco. I mean, you saw, I mean, the city, what happened, the parade. I mean, it's beyond, you know, words. Euphoria. I mean, this thing was even bigger than I thought, you know. And it just was the gift that kept on giving, too. I mean, You win the World Series, and then, of course, the parade, the rains. But, I mean, spring training, you saw – you couldn't get hardly a ticket for a spring training game. And so how it just changed the city. And to have so many people come up to me, usually, you know, it'd be somebody middle-aged or it could be younger saying, you know, my mom or dad, they waited all their life for this. You know, it just impacted the whole city, the Bay Area. So, and it was my first ring. So, you know, that's the one that, and I tell people, I mean, the ring itself may not be the biggest, but it's my favorite. And it's the one I wear when I wear a ring.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's like the 2012 ring, I feel like it's so big that it's a little bit too gaudy for my taste. And to be honest with you, in 2012, I don't really wear it because I didn't really deserve it anyway. I sucked in 2012.
At least but, he owns it,
Buck. I was a ghost. Yeah. But speaking of that 2010 team, I mean, I always go back to that because those people in that locker room, the guys in the locker room, Tim Lincecum, you know, Brian Wilson, obviously Pat Burrell, Cody Ross. It was a tight-knit bunch. And I've always said this, and me and the Hammer, we agree, on any team I've ever played on, it seems like the clubhouse chemistry, damn the talent, honestly. I mean, you could have a list, you could have superstars up and down a lineup, but you got to have guys in there that love to be together. How important do you think that group of guys in 2010, 12, and 14 for that matter, and you've seen it as a manager, how important is that clubhouse chemistry?
Well, I mean, I've talked about this so many times. I mean, you look at the game now. Obviously, it's changed a lot with the data that you get and all the analytics. But you can't measure, you know, the heart and the chemistry of a ball club. You have to have talent to win. But that talent, if it doesn't come together, if it doesn't gel or bond, then it's not going to work. And so I think you look at those years. I don't think we were ever the favorite. But I don't think there was a closer knit group than what we had during those years, and guys that you know, cared for each other, had each other's back, and played for each other, and that's what made us so good. I really believe that. Sure, we had great pitching, Lincecum and Kane and Bumgarner, but really we were a scrappy bunch that came together and just played as a team, and that's. That's all, the only way I think we get it done. And I've said this in so many interviews, and it bears repeating itself. But, you know, the biggest characteristic of that club was how unselfish every player was. And they're willing to do whatever it took to help win. I mean, we can look at Lincecum going to the bullpen, for mm-hmm. example, or, you know, even talking to Zito in 2010, he, you know, we took him off the roster. 2012, he ended up playing a major role. Right. But these guys never once came in my office and complained and never questioned what I was doing. And it just was a special group. And it doesn't happen without the culture that was created. And it was created because of you guys helping build that in there by holding each other accountable, you know, to doing things right.
Yeah, I mean, that's for me in 2010, you know, man, I love to keep the clubhouse loose. And, you know, you dubbed us like the misfits. Nobody wanted us. We were just a bunch of cast-offs. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think in both 2010 and 2012, we were the 8th seed going into the playoffs. Nobody gave us a shot. But we believed, and in the clubhouse, we've had that belief in each other. I mean, I've never been on a team where I couldn't wait to get to the field first and be one of the last ones to leave. And I think that's so undervalued in today's game. So speaking of keeping it loose in the clubhouse, I got to ask you, if you remember, I wore that rally thong in 2010. And, right. You know, you would always puke when you see me walk around naked. That was all I'd have on walking around that clubhouse, just to kind of keep the guys loose, especially in that tight playoff race we had in 2010. And if you remember, I think the underwear is called Poppy. And they sent a big, huge box to the clubhouse. And I handed out all that underwear for all the teammates. Gave you some, too. Do you still have some of that underwear, Boach?
And do you wear
it? I still have it.
You do?
Yeah. But, you know, I'll be honest. You know, I'm waiting for the right occasion to wear
it. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Right. Oh, that's not going
to happen. Yeah, that's right. They send them all to you. And you know what? You know, to your point, I mean, we had guys, we were the misfits. And what I liked is everybody had, their own personality, of course, but it came out in them. And you brought levity. Romo and Wilson brought a little craziness. Bumgarner was the serious one, the focus one. Of course, Timmy was a free spirit. But it all came together. And, you know, we were really a diverse group. But, you know, when you appreciate it and you appreciate guys who are a little different than you, it can be a beautiful thing when it comes together. That's what I'll remember from that group.
You know, you've obviously managed for a long time and had a lot of great players around you. I want to touch on two guys in particular. I think that's really, really close to you, and they play with you since you've been with the Giants. And Madison Bumgarner, Buster Posey, these two guys, like when I came in 2010, when Buster came up, I remember it was a big deal. Buster came up, right? And all the reporters were at his locker the first day. And I remember giving him a hard time. Oh, Jesus is here to save the day. It's Jesus, Jesus. Just kind of giving him the whole rookie hazing kind of thing. And what I loved about Buster is I tell people this all the time. People ask me, what's Buster Posey like? And to me, I always say, you know what? Buster is so humble. He reminds me of a Derek Jeter type, where he's a boring interview, gives you just what you need, but he's a guy in the clubhouse that keeps it pretty serious in his preparation, and he's just a natural leader. And what is he brought to the clubhouse since you've been there?
Well, I mean, he changed our club. I mean, when we brought up Buster Posey, and he led the pitching staff, of course, the bat too, playing in the heart of the order. And we were a different club, and this is how good this guy is. But to your point, not just what he did on the field. I mean, it just is. How professional he is, and he's all business. We had the crazy ones like you that, like I said, brought the levity, but he was one that probably kept us grounded and kept us humble and kept us focused, especially the pitching staff, and through his leadership handling these guys in it. That was not an easy staff to run. If you remember, I mean, you know, Timmy was, he could be out there. Kane was a stoic one. Bumgardner was a serious one. You had Wilson and Romo, AFL, these guys. But you know what? For a young kid to do what he did is still one of the more impressive things I've ever seen in my 25 years of managing, because there was pressure put on him. This was the number one pick. This was the guy that was getting all the attention, and it was thrown at him. But the way he handled it, and the way that he did stay humble through all that. And in fact, after we won it, you know, I was talking to him on the plane as we were flying back from Texas. I said, "Buster, this is your team now. You're the guy. This is your club, and you know, you're going to be the one leading these pitchers in this club." And sure enough, we win two more, and you look at what this guy's accomplished. And he's gone through a lot, you know, the ankle surgery, now hip surgery, but you know, he's still the guy that you want out there running a staff.
Yeah, and you as an ex-catcher, I think you would agree, there's not a better battery out there, in my opinion, over the last, you know, 8 to 10 years than Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner. And watching those guys two work together. And when Madison came up, you know, I remember him coming up. He's a big guy, kind of had that red ass about him. I loved him immediately. Guy drinks moonshine, you know, just that kind of that rough redneck kind of guy. And did you see him being as dominant as he is? I mean, I didn't really see that coming. I knew he had a great start in 2010 against the Rangers in game 4, I believe. And that's when I was like, oh, wow, this guy's got something. That lineup in Texas, he shut them down and just continued on in every playoff game he's ever had. World Series dominance. Did you see him being that good? And do you think you guys are going to be able to keep him?
Yeah. You know what? I saw him being really good. I think you look at the game you just mentioned. Here's a 20-year-old kid pitching in the World Series and shut out Texas in Texas for 8 innings. I mean, that's a pretty big stage and how he handled it. And people look at him as you describe a little bit, you know, just big country, strong guy that goes out there and just lets it go. There's not a more cerebral pitcher in all my years than Madison Bumgarner. This guy watches the game. No one's more prepared. Nobody works harder. His work ethic is off the chart. He's one of those guys that and to me, it's what separates the average player from the good player, is when they don't ever think they arrive. They're always trying to get better. And that's Madison. And that's what makes him so good. And now, could I see him doing what he did in 2014? No. That's the greatest postseason performance ever. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, they talk about Mickey Lolich with the Tigers, but he didn't have to pitch a wild card game with all that pressure on the road in Pittsburgh. And what he did every start and the workload that he carried, this guy, we don't accomplish what we did without him. And this guy will always be, to me, one of the best performers under pressure of any player I've ever managed.
Yeah. Well, Boach, I want to get to you for a second. Spring training this year, you announced you're going to retire after years of coaching. And obviously, I think you're a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think there's any dispute about that. So what led you to that decision? Was it just time for you?
Just a lot of players like Aubrey Huff playing for me drove me to this. But no, seriously, you know, I just had a moment there. And at the end of September last year, I talked to Larry Bear, our president. And I said, you know what, Larry, you know, next year will be good. It was last year of my contract. And you know, sometimes you just say it's time. And, you know, as a player, and same thing for me. I love it. I said, listen, you're going to get all I got. I'm going to go in next year and do all I can to help this team get on track. I want to finish on a good note, but it's time. Now, there were some other things, sure. I got grandkids, maybe other things I want to do. We were getting a new president, GM, Farhan. I didn't want, you know, I want him, you know, to make sure that he had the freedom to do what he wanted. I don't want to have to answer the question every day, you know, what's going to happen with Bochy. I didn't want to answer that question. I didn't want the players to answer that question. And I said, you know what? I can really enjoy and savor this. I'm just going to get it out there in the spring and say, hey, this is it. And I'm having a time of my life, and I'm proud of these guys, how you know, where we were in such a deep hole that now they're playing really important games. So I'm proud of them. And Aubrey, I told the players this. I said, I want you guys to savor this because I am. Because when you see things coming to an end, you learn to appreciate them even more and what you have and playing this game. And so that's the way it's been with me. Sometimes you look back and you go, I shouldn't have taken those losses so hard. I shouldn't save the wins a little bit longer. And I'm doing that now. And so I'm having a blast.
Well, that's good. Well, I'll tell you, whenever I retired, I thought to myself, I'm 37 years old. I'm retired. I don't have to do jack shit the rest of my life. I'm going to go home and do nothing. And within a couple years, I was losing my mind of boredom, right? And so I got to ask you, you know, you played for the Padres back in there. You've managed for the Padres. You're up there in San Francisco. What's next for you? Do you see yourself doing some kind of front office, you know, small role with somebody to keep yourself? Or are you just going to be fishing all day?
No, you can't fish all day. I'm not that much big a golfer. Hey, I'm going to do something in baseball. I don't know what capacity. And I get asked, you know, you think you'll ever manage again? I don't know. I'm good with it right now with my decision. But, you know, like you were saying, I may take a few months off, a year off, and go, I miss it. I may try to get back in the dugout. I don't know. But what I do know is I will stay in the game in some capacity because it's my blood. I've been doing it for so long. And I'll be honest, I'm afraid to go. My wife is too, you know, go home and we stare at each other every day. We may find out we don't like each other.
Hey, that happened to me really quick.
Yeah. Which is we've been married over 40 years. So, but anyway, now we've actually talked about a little bit about what my role would be. And, you know, I want to help out, help the kids, and spend some time with the big club too. And but we haven't defined that role yet, but I definitely will have to do something.
Yeah, and I think the big trend in today's game too is, you know, as you being an ex-catcher, is all these major league teams now are hiring catchers to be managers. And for me, a lot of people ask me, you know, what was it like to play for Bruce Bochy? You know, and the one thing I always tell people, I'm like, listen, Bochy was the most spectacular manager ever played for me, because one thing is he knows how to manage all the different personalities in a clubhouse. I mean, for instance, like a guy like Andres Torres, you know, he needed to be cuddled a little bit, Butch, whenever he was struggling to get the best out of him. Me, Burrow, we needed to get our asses chewed out a little bit to play better. You knew how to read guys in your clubhouse, which a lot of managers I played for didn't. I mean, I played for Lou Piniella. The guy just chewed out everybody through spread all over the time, you know. So, you know, a lot of different managers for me. And you separate yourself from that pack in the sense, like I said, you just knew how to handle your not only your players, but your staff and the media. And you're just so even keeled. And I think a lot of people gravitate to you. Was that something that you just naturally have, or did you work at it?
Well, I think you have to work at it. You know, I think, you know, the best thing for me is I started managing in rookie ball, and you get these young kids from all over, not just the country, the world. And, you know, the 4 years that I spent managing minor leagues, I think you learn, you know, from every year. And what I'm talking about is the managing your people. And I look at that. I know people sometimes say, well, it's X's and O's, the game strategy or whatever. But to me, it's managing your people, because getting back to what we were talking about earlier about the culture and the chemistry of a ball club, to me, that can be as important as any part of the job. And so, you know, you have to realize at some point you understand that, hey, we're all different, you know, and one size doesn't fit all. How you treat people, as you mentioned, you know, Lensicum was one that needed to call me. Buster, you just need to be straightforward with him. Don't BS him. He's going to read it if you try. You know, you just got to tell him what you want or what you think he needs to do. You know, with you, you had to try to keep you in line sometimes. I mean, Pablo, we had to keep him out of the kitchen. So anyway, my point being, each one, you do realize, hey, they're different, and you got to treat them different. Now, the bottom line, I try to, you know, use the golden rule. I try to treat people the way I would want to be treated. And you know, hey, if I have to have a conversation, it's in the office. I'd never try to go through the media. Maybe I didn't always get it right, but I just didn't want to do it that way because that's not how I would have wanted it. And I probably learned that from Bill Burton, who I played for in Pittsburgh. And again, you take something from, you know, every year and every manager you ever played for. But I just think that's as important as any role I could have is dealing with the ups and downs that these players have in the clubhouse and how I treat them.
Well, you know, speaking of guys you got in the clubhouse, one of the most interesting cats I have ever played with. How did you manage this guy, Brian Wilson? How did you handle that guy from a day-to-day basis?
You know, I think with Brian, you had to call him out sometimes, but you had to let him be who he is.
Right.
The only way you can play this game is having that looseness and freedom of being who you are, not getting reeled in too much. And that to me can create tension, whatever. And so Brian, sure, he was different. Now, we had our incidents. And I'll tell you the first one. We brought him up. And when we first brought him up, we had a day game and then a night game the next day. Well, he went back to Fresno to pack up his stuff. And coming back, I guess he caught in traffic. He got there like 6:45, a half hour before the game. And so I grab him and I brought him in the office. I slammed the door. I tried to slam it for effect. My finger's in there. I break my finger and it's hurting so bad. But I don't want Brian to know I just killed my finger and I actually broke it. But so I'm giving him the business. You ever do this again, you'll never be up here. Sometimes you got to set things straight and make sure they don't, stray too far, so to speak. But, and he was very respectful. And one thing about Brian was a very bright guy too, as you know, and he was very respectful to me. Anytime I had to get on him or whatever, I mean, he took it, never, was combative, but that guy, I tell you what, an animal. He never turned down a ball. He'd say things like, hey, we play 162 games. I want 162 outings. I mean, this is stuff he would say, but you let him be who he is at the same time. But he was a guy that you would have to call out sometimes.
Yeah, I remember he would always say, hey, Boach, you want to win today, you better let me pitch. That's
right, right, right.
Yeah, he did not lack confidence. And, have you heard from him lately? I'm starting to wonder, I haven't heard from him in a long time, if the machine has finally taken him. You remember the machine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was.
You know what? I have not. Last time I heard from him was probably, I'd say, maybe three years ago. They had that Wall of Fame thing, and he went up on it.
Yeah.
And he came out for it and had a nice little talk, speech. He was, he was as normal as I've seen him. And this is a guy that was a little different. My first year, I joined the Giants. This is back 2007. He was pretty straight. He was, in fact, he was pretty religious. Had a Bible with him a lot. This is a guy that kind of went the other way, not in a bad way, but you know what I mean. He just became a different guy, and that's what worked for him, and that's what made him so good. As you know, closers, they beat to a different drum, and that's what makes them special.
Yeah, he definitely march to the beat of his own drummer, but he's a great teammate. One of the first ones to the field, one of the last ones to leave. And I remember me and Burl and him would just be shooting the shit in the clubhouse the entire 2010. That was my favorite team I've ever played for. And, this year you guys have like you said earlier in the show, you guys start off really, really, really tough and you came on strong here recently. I think you guys are about a 3.5 out of the wild card. There's no fucking way you guys win the division. I mean, you're 19.5 back from the Dodgers. What 3.5 out, what do you guys need to do to get that? I'd love to see in the playoffs one last time, Boach. What do you guys got to do?
Well, it's pretty simple. I mean, we can talk about, pitching or hitting, whatever. You got to win games when you're behind. We got some teams in front of us, not one team. That's what makes it more difficult. Yeah. So every game, we got to go out there, with mentality that it's the biggest game of the year. You don't put that pressure on you, but you put that focus on you. That's what I'm talking about. That margin of error is getting smaller now as we get toward the end here. Now, to be a little more specific, that starting pitching's got to come around. What happened yesterday? Now, it's hard to get our guys to throw seven shutout innings against this club every day, but give us a chance to win. And that's what's gotten away from us in our little stumble here. We got some young kids that have been struggling, and our starting pitching's got to be consistent. And if that is consistent, then that gives you a chance to get on a run, a nice roll. And that's what has to happen for us. We got to get on another July run. And of course, you need a little help when you get three, four, or five teams ahead of you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, I want to get a little vulnerable here, Butch. You know, in 2011, I had that whole thing go down. In 2010, I think, you know, I went to rehab and just won the World Series. And I remember at the time, it was about 2 months left before 2011 spring training, I'd made a phone call to you. And, you know, I was hooked on those Adderall pills. I was going through a tough time with my marriage. And I'd called you up and I said, Butch, listen, man, you know, I know we just won the World Series. And I know I'm supposed to be in spring training. I'll be there on time, but I got to let you know something. I'm going to be in rehab for the next month or two, and I'll show up ready to go. And I said, can you keep this between just me and you? And nobody ever heard about it. It was between you and me, and I really appreciate that. And going into 2011, gosh, man, I was just such a fucking mental train wreck, and you handled it beautifully. And in 2012, you know, obviously the whole panic attack, the anxiety, the stuff that I went through, you handled it with class, and it was just amazing how the organization responded to that. And for that, I appreciate, because I can't tell you, there's probably a lot of managers out there who wouldn't handle it the way you did. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, as you know, being in San Francisco, what's special about the organization, it's like a family. And that's how I think we look at each other. And anytime we can help, I mean, I felt bad. I put you in second base. I think that was the final straw.
Yeah, well,
and I apologize for that.
That might have triggered the meltdown. It's a great video.
I'll take some blame for that.
No, it's not you.
But you know what? This game could beat you up, as you know, sometimes. And you can't forget that. I can't forget how hard this game is. And and the stuff that players go through. And so anyway, no, I appreciate because we got you, and it was a gamble. If you remember, I mean, it's Brian was not afraid to stick his neck out, and he did. And with you playing first base and providing the offense and things that you did, bring the levity and everything, nobody played a bigger role in us winning in 2010 than you.
Well, thank you, Boas. Thank you. And, you know, you're key to that too, man. You're a three-time World Series champion for a reason. It's a lot of your demeanor and not only how you handle the clubhouse, but the way you know, manage the game as well. And so have you already began starting to write that Hall of Fame speech yet?
Yeah, right. I actually had a guy at the ballpark yesterday. He had this Hall of Fame bat, and he said, can you sign this? And first time I saw was Bob Gibson. I said, you think I'm going to sign that bat? I said, that's a sacred place. And for me to even mention that, it's mind-boggling to me. And so I said, no. And the guy he was in the service. I said, sir, I'll sign anything but that, you know. And, you know, that's a place you think of the Bob Gibsons and Johnny Bench, Willie Mays, and all those guys. And, you know, as managers, yeah, we get carried in by players. And so it's just a different thing. And it's not comfortable for me to even talk about it.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I'm proud of you, man. It's been a hell of a career for you. And I will say this, you will have the biggest wall plaque on the Hall of Fame Cooperstown wall. That hat size of yours, eight and a half inch hat. What a dome.
You know, it's got a little bigger, too. How come your head gets bigger the older you get?
I wish that was the case for down low in my pants. I wish that was the case. It's getting smaller. Oh, but hey, man, I know you're busy. You got a game today against the Diamondbacks, man. Finish strong. Hopefully we see you guys in the playoffs. I'd love to see you go out with a bang, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show. Love you. And best of luck the rest of the way.
right, Aubrey. Great to visit with you. Yeah. It really has been. And y'all take care, and I'll see you down the road.
You got it, Boach. See you, bud.
All right, thanks, man.
That was great, probably catching up.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, it's funny. You never know, you know, a guy that busy. Yeah. You know, you feel like sometimes you ask some of these guys to come on, players, what have you. You feel like, you know, you're imposing on them because they got a lot to do. And believe me, when I played, I was like, oh, shit, man.
Yeah.
I gotta
you
go.
Were the same. You
I
were,
was
you
saying, were. I got to do a podcast for 30 minutes, and you got to pretend that, you know, you can actually hear people when they're kind of pretending they don't want to be on it. We've done enough of these things already. We're, you know, he really wasn't into it.
Yeah.
You could tell right there. He was genuinely happy to, like, really just catch up.
To catch up. And,
right.
And you know, he's leaving the game. You've left the game. I didn't play in the big leagues, but I left the game. And that's for me, just sitting here listening to you guys, you know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, these guys are going at it. And it's just – it's the camaraderie that I hear, right? And it comes back to probably brings back a lot of memories for you of being in the locker room with him every day. And we all have that when you're with someone every day, all the teammates. It's good to listen to, right? I mean, it takes me back and go, man, I miss those days.
You know, it's funny. When I asked him that question about the what's his favorite World Series teams of 2010, 12, or 14, I knew what he was going to say.
Yeah.
And I don't think it'd be biased. It was 2010, obviously. I think the first one you get is definitely special. But, you know, being in that clubhouse – that year in 2010, like I said, man, I played for 13 years in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Played for the Devil Rays for 6 years, played for the Baltimore Orioles for 3 years. And they were good guys, but we lost. And there was a little bit of, you know, attitudes in there and egos and just weird people. And just the vibe just didn't feel right in all those clubhouses, right?
Yeah.
From the not only the players' side, but more importantly, management, coaches. It just didn't vibe right, and you could kind of sense that. So for me, my first 9 years, I'm like, wow, this is the big leagues. This don't feel right. And when I got to San Francisco, from the top, from the ownership to the staff to Boach to all the players, I'm like, the minute I was in that clubhouse for a week, I was like, wow, I'm finally in the big leagues. I can't imagine if I would have done it opposite.
Yeah.
Started my career like in San Francisco with a class A organization like that.
Yeah.
And then go to a place like Tampa that I was at the time. Tampa's good now, but when I was, they were shit.
Yeah.
And to go to that, man, I don't know if I would have made it that long. And a lot's to be said about how to lead a clubhouse. And that guy did it better than anybody.
Yeah.
It's such a pleasure to have him on. And, you know, today was tough though, Hammer. I got to tell you, man, me and you are both.
we're getting it done. It's fantastic.
It is. But you know, we wanted to get him in studio.
We did.
We wanted to get him in studio, but
to your point earlier, I mean,
busy,
for him, he's busy, right?
Busy.
I mean, he probably appreciated it. He gets to catch up with you. You know, he gets a little extra time.
Yeah.
And
I wanted to kind of touch on a story with Madison Bumgarner, but I forgot to ask him. I blew it. But the listeners will love this story. We were, for any of those people that have been to the Denver airport, right? Yeah. That Denver airport is like a 45-minute drive into the city.
Yeah.
So we were going in from the stadium in Colorado. I think it's Coors Field. Coors Field to the airport. It's a 45-minute drive. It's after the game. It's I think it was a day game we played. So it's around probably 7 o'clock at night. We're heading to the airport. Everybody's having the pops on the, you know, on the plane, and or not on the plane, but on the bus on the way to the airport. And the bus breaks down. Oh. We're halfway to the airport, and the bus driver's like, and you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, bus is down, smoke's coming out of the hood, the whole deal. And all of a sudden, from the back, we hear this guy, oh, shit, don't worry. Hey, Bussy, I'll fix it. This big old boy, Madison Bumgarner, just comes firing down the aisle. Walks right outside, pops that hood open. Within five minutes, fires it up, boom, to the airport. Madison Bumgarner fixed the
bus.
Yeah, with a heavy buzz on.
What was wrong with it?
I don't know. I don't know. He did.
To this day, you don't even know.
Just the most. It was almost like nobody said a word. It was just kind of jaw dropping watching this guy do this.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, Madison Bumgarner, man, for me, watching those guys do on the field. And what people don't know about Madison is he is a strong son of a bitch.
Yeah. Right?
If, you know, all you baseball fans out there watching, him and Puig have this like little thing together. You've seen Puig.
Puig's a big boy.
He's a big boy. And people always say, oh, Puig would put him down. I don't think people realize just how strong Bumgarner is. Now, we every so often you have this like little wrestling match in the clubhouse, right? Where any guy that wanted to challenge Madison, could do it at any moment.
Just for pride.
Just for pride. Yeah. There was no money involved, no nothing. He just wanted to fight people. He loves to fight.
Yeah.
And every so often, somebody would challenge him. And one day I decided I would give that a whirl. So I showed, hey, bum, me and you. Now, are you sure, Huffy? I'm like, yeah, let's go. Within 2 seconds, he had me on the ground, roping me like a cow. Like knee in my back. He is so country strong, unbelievably strong. And the worst part is, you know, I've seen him in the shower. I mean, he's well endowed. Oh. I felt the anaconda on my back.
Oh, jeez.
It was.
He literally put you down.
He put me down. So for anybody who thinks Yasiel Puig could kick his ass, I don't know, man. I think it would be a pretty decent fight. But I think in the end, that country strong, man, old man strength that he's got.
Somebody should put that fight together.
Although Yasiel Puig, he did like. I think I've heard he's like fought sharks and shit or some shit or alligators or something.
He's wrestled them.
Yeah, wrestled.
He's wrestled the alligators. Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Somebody put that fight together.
Oh, that would be a pay-per-view for sure.
Oh,
for
sure. I mean, if yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Well, anyway.
It was great.
It was a good episode. It was good banter. I was expecting you to ask some kind of catching question.
You know, I was thinking about that, but it was just nice to hear you guys catching up. And, you know, like I told you, I was thinking the whole time, man, those are the days you miss. You know, the camaraderie, the guys you're around every day, the guy next to you pulling for each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was nice to listen to you two just go get it. And, you know, I stayed out of it, which is okay, too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up.
Yeah.
As far as the retirement goes.
Yeah, it's promising to hear that, you know, he said, I don't know where it's going to go. Yeah. And I may get back into baseball. I want to be in baseball. Yeah. And
I'm surprised to hear he may want to manage again.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he caught for a long time. He's managed for a long time. I mean, to get out of the game would be, I think, you know, a travesty to the game itself because, you know, all the experience and, you know, the things he can pass on to the younger generation coming up. Mm-hmm. It would be sad if the game lost that. So I think it's exciting and still awesome that he said, you know what, I'm going to be in baseball in some capacity.
Well, yeah. I mean, gosh, I played baseball for 13 years and he's been in the game way longer than that.
Yeah.
So like he said, it's in his blood, right? Yep. What do you do at his age now? You just retire and it's just you're so used to competing and being around the guys all the time. And when you're done with that and you're not around the guys all the time and you're not around that adrenaline and that excitement, your mind can play tricks on you.
Oh, yeah. Everyone has a transition in whatever they do and when they've been doing something for a long time. And I assume he'll be no different. And but if he gets back into the game, you know, it'll be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, shit, man. I filled that void with a lot of booze for a while there. Well, speaking of booze, here we go. We got this episode was brought to you by Lumberland Company. And so Lumberland, they have a baseball bat. They hollow it out and they make beer mugs. And for you guys out there that are interested to go see these beer mugs, they're unbelievable. They get custom logos, pictures for all your coaches out there, for great gifts for mom or dad, you know, for special occasions. You can head to www.lumberland.com and get 10% off your order with code OFFTHECUFF. That's www.lumberland.com and design your bat mug today. Well, Hammer, that was an interesting episode.
Very good episode.
Love to have Boach on again here soon. We can talk fishing next time.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Possibly. You're not a good fisherman.
I'm not a good fisherman. No. He could teach us, though. You're not a good fisherman.
No, I don't fish.
Yeah.
No.
We don't do shit.
I wish I would have done that in life at some point. Learned that love.
There you go. Huff and the Hammer,
out.